here first things first, now joined by friend of the show and Rocket's general manager, Daryl Morey.
All right, we'll do one of these, Daryl. I understand you're doing a lot of traveling, trying to stay healthy.
MIT conference.
Absolutely.
Coming up, so.
I'll just wave. It's nice to see you. I'm even more precautious. Kevin, this is Daryl.
Yeah,
we did a little thing earlier. We got to start asking about last night. You were at the game. Nick was at the game. We now know why the Rockets keep losing when he's at the game.
You guys have lost five in a row that I've been at.
We're just trying to help Leon out. He's got to get
a
big win.
First win.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah,
you guys
absolutely.
Are so generous.
Yeah, I know. That's what we're here for.
Listen, the narrative is...
Oh, let me guess.
Okay,
go
ahead.
Rebound or something.
Well, something to the effect of small ball, whether it's working or not. You were out-rebounded last night, third by 31, but you're the general manager of the team.
Well, so I find that interesting. Some reason, there are acceptable ways to lose and there are unacceptable ways to lose.
Okay.
Apparently, being out-rebounded is an unacceptable
way.
We can go 9-2 or whatever since Capella, but we get out-rebounded one game.
So last night didn't bother you as much?
I mean, yeah,
it
bothered me. We lost
narrative.
To a team we should never lose to, and so that bothered me, but...
Why do you think you lost?
Well, we definitely got out-rebounded. I mean, so that's true. But my point is, on any given night, a team will lose because they take bad shots. They turn it over too much, sometimes out-rebounded. But good thing is we're giving people a lot to talk about. And
we led the show with you guys, Daryl.
Okay. I unfortunately didn't catch it.
That's
But I would say, there are certain ways that people just viscerally don't love to lose. They don't love to look smaller and be out rebounded. They don't like to be beasted in the post and those kinds of things. But if a team out transitions you, you take open shots but miss them and lose that way, no one's talking. You guys aren't talking about it today. So let's
go to the Capella trade because, and I'll say this for you, you won't say it. This is one of the many instances where Daryl Morey does something. The entire basketball media says, the hell is this guy thinking? And then the instant results are, maybe there was a method to the madness. When Capella was traded, people instantly said, do you guys not know you don't have it? Have you measured the players on the team? Your thought process when you decide to trade away a guy, I know at times you've been high on. You gave him a contract, you found him, you drafted him, you developed him. The thought process going into that, the pros and the cons that you knew would go along with it.
Yeah, so the biggest reason for the trade was to get Covington. So, and he's actually been even better than we thought. We thought it'd be great. As you mentioned, he was at the Rockets first and we sort of knew what we were getting, but he's developed and gotten way better. So the main focus was get Covington. And the reason for that is not only how good he is, but how much he helps, we think, everyone on the team, but in particular, Russell Westbrook. The driving lanes for him, we think, are super important. And in fact, he hasn't played with this spacing before, and it unlocks, basically, we think, the best Russell and allows him to do what you even saw last night. I mean, he almost came back, and we dug ourselves a hole, and he almost brought us back by himself. So,
I have a question about Russ. Was that the plan all along for Russ, or is this something that you saw Russ say, how can I get create a situation that makes Russ even better than MVP Russ?
I love that you asked that. So generally when we make moves, especially when you're talking about your big foundational players, like your superstars, even your top five rotation, we always make moves. You want to make a move where you're into a stable place. So we actually thought it would work with Capella, and it was working with Capella. It just wasn't working good enough to win the championship, we thought. So once we saw how that worked or didn't work, then we said, okay, we've got to make another move, and we feel like we're stable here. Now, if whatever happens, teams in the league are smart. Yeah, maybe they will figure out how to make it hard for us as we play smaller. Maybe in the playoffs this will happen. But now we have actually, the trade also gave us a lot of flexibility to add players into the future as well. It wasn't just a sort of a one-year move.
This clearly worked with Russ. I mean, something was unlocked in him, and it's really taken off. Give me behind the scenes. How does it work? Do you sit down with him and have a conversation and say, look, we're going to make a couple moves. The goal here is to open up lanes for you, not have to shoot as much, focus on getting to the basket. Is that something that happens organically, or do you sit down with him and say, this is our vision? Do you see yourself working with that?
Yeah, so we love working in close harmony with our superstars. That's why people love playing in Houston. Besides, it's a great city and a long winning
tradition. And you're there, obviously.
Well, we have a great team of people, and you said nice things too, but we have a really good team of people over time, and superstars in the league understand that we're a good place to come. And part of it's because we see us as in partnership with them. I would say with James, there's more conversations. He likes to get involved in that. Russ just loves to play. So there wasn't a whole lot of conversation with Russell. He gets basketball, and he just wants to go out there and kill people. And I think you see it on the court.
Saw it last night.
Yeah, and he trusts what Coach D'Antoni is doing. He trusts what we're doing. James does too, but James likes to have more conversations. And whatever, we basically work with our stars as much or as little as they want to be involved.
I want to stay on Russ 2 points. One is last night, I thought he really hurt himself early in that first quarter.
I was concerned.
So that's what I was going to say. We can talk about it now because we know he didn't. In the moment, you're sitting there because of his reaction. Someone bumps him. I didn't see exactly how it happened, but I saw him call timeout. I saw him then slam a chair, and I'm like, oh, Russ knows he just really hurt his knee. In that moment for you, when you have seen, unfortunately, a star player in a critical moment for you pull up and you say, oh, well, everything I built, okay, let's see how it goes. What is going through your mind in those 2 minutes where he's working out on the sideline? He ended up being fine, but is your whole season like flashing before your eyes? Like, okay, this is great. This is great.
Yes. I mean, so when it happened, I saw it happen live. I was in a suite. And I literally just watched every single movement just to try and read the tea leaves. Because, yeah, I mean, it's fragile. I mean, injuries are a huge part of this game. And you got to have not only players playing at their peak, but all healthy to win the title. I think we saw that with Golden State last year. Even one of the greatest teams ever assembled finally had too many injuries to take them down. And so, and then he started, it looked like he was moving well. And, you know, frankly, we won't know completely how things are until the next day. Often you don't really know, but our staff was very positive after the game, and so was Russell.
So one follow-up on Russ, because you said you guys don't have conversations with him. I find this
no I do. It's
no,
just,
I know,
he's
but not
as
to the same level. Yeah. I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
Listen, the knock on Russ, and I'm as big of a Russ fan before he was a Rocket, as a Rocket as anybody out there, because I admire his intensity. I admire guys like Kevin Garnett, who if you put on the film, you cannot tell. Is this game 7 of a playoff series, or is this a random March day against the Knicks? You can't tell. The knock on him, though, was he didn't have the greatest shot selection. And when he was in OKC, he took a lot of threes that he probably shouldn't be taking. His first month with you guys, he's taken 5 a game. His second month with you guys, he's taken 4 a game. Since January 1, he's at 2 3-point attempts a game. Is that you guys shoot more threes than anyone? He shoots fewer threes than he's ever done in his career. How does that happen?
Well, again, I think he's smart. He sees the floor open. So we don't have a lot of conversations with Russ on how he should play, because he's a guy who plays with passion and energy, and you can't not love it, honestly. Like, when he was in Oklahoma City, I hated him. I'll be frank. Like, he played with such a passion, and he would win games just off his energy alone. And here it's the same thing. Coach D'Antoni is not out there saying, like, do this, do that. He wants to set up the environment to take Russ's skills, which are really unique in NBA history, with his strength and speed and power. He might be the most athletic player in the league still at age 31, which is really crazy and unheard of. Maybe the guy you really like is
similar
there.
Up there too. Yeah.
Well, but he's young. Yeah. I'm talking about older.
Oh, you mean older guys. Yeah,
absolutely. No, I'm saying among older guys. And we didn't have a lot of the time. We just said, look, we're going to put players around you. You go do your thing, Russ. And I think if you start prescribing or proscribing what you do, you take away a lot of what makes Russ great, which is his unbelievable will to win and energy.
The most fun part about this small ball lineup from a media person perspective is that it's just confusing to form a narrative around it. That you go
you
off.
You guys are so good at
no,
that.
No, but it's just
come
fun.
On.
But it's fun. You rip off a bunch of wins and then you lose to the Knicks and get out-rebounded by a historic differential. And then you have lost to the Suns, and it's a weird game. So you have these weird games, and people are like, I don't like it. Actually, the Celtics games, I do like it. So it's confusing. How should the media talk about the small ball lineup and what you're doing?
You should just talk about how good we are overall, and we've played really good. And unfortunately, so we have the best record in the league, along with the Bucks, against good teams. We have beaten the Lakers on the road. We've beaten pretty much every good team. We only lost to the Bucks by one. And the reality is, but we're not where the Bucks are. We're not on pace for 70 wins. So what does that mean? All year we've been losing to bad teams.
So that's what's confusing.
Well, I think so the advantage we have is we have a team of guys all over the age of 30. We're the oldest team in the league. Their only thing they haven't accomplished is win the title, right? That's the good thing. So they're very focused in big games. I think maybe one of those things that's negative is on nights when they're playing one of the bad teams, it's a little bit hard when you're over 30 to say, I'm going to get up for this game when I know it's just a Monday night regular season game against a team, you know, in the lottery. And so, again, I don't want that to be an excuse. Mm-hmm. We're frustrated by it. But the reality is, I think that's
what
goes on.
And you could tell last night they thought they were going to down 19 with 2 minutes left in the third quarter. And they were like, we still got it. And you guys came this like it was.
You almost did.
If the 19-point deficit was a 15-point deficit, you guys win the game. You know what I mean? They had it in them to come back. It was just
in a 2-point game, like, it just means it was random who won, basically.
I want to ask you about Harden and Giannis and that little verbal beef we had, but would you stick around and give us one more segment?
For you.
And Daryl's going to also fix basketball for us.
Oh, that perfect. Is
both of those things.
Well,
two of equal importance.
Coming up.
Back here on First Things First, still hanging with Rockets GM Daryl Morey. All right. Daryl, before the break, we teased the little war of words between Giannis and James Harden we all talked about this week. What do you make of that?
Nothing.
Okay.
We should have teased it wasn't going to be very exciting.
Thank you for all sticking around. We really appreciate it.
I think Giannis had said a few things that maybe made James.
But he said a few things that we've kind of heard, I'm sure, over the years. I'm sure Harden's heard over the years. But Harden seemed to have taken this opportunity to actually speak up and say something, defend himself.
I think he had said a few things. I believe Giannis that he wasn't intentionally really going at him. And I think James said a couple things. I mean, it keeps the talk shows going, but I don't think it was a big thing.
All right, but I want to stay on it in this regard.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was a bad take by James. I love James Harden. It's just bad basketball take.
But obviously, what he said about Giannis.
Obviously, Giannis is incredibly skilled. We've had hundreds of seven-footers in NBA history. None of them look like Giannis. I know you can't talk about him because he's a player on another team. I can say that. But to me, it was James Harden saying, you know what, enough is enough. As far as the guy's won an assist title, people say he's a ball hog. They say you can't win playing his style. Nobody took a healthy Warriors to 6. You guys had them to 7, down 15. I know it's a painful memory, but without your second best player. So on the Harden side of things, do you think Harden is not Giannis, but Harden is the most disrespected superstar in this league? And if so, why do you think that is? Because I don't think people just dislike the beard. There's got to be a reason.
I love
for
the
it.
Beard.
Yeah.
I do think he's disrespected. I do. But I think every team feels that of their players. But I think for us, it feels more real. But why is it? I don't know. I think he's quiet. He goes about his business. I don't think it's very rare for him to do something like say some stuff that, you know, seem like shots at people. That's very rare. He's just and until you win it, I think everyone's going to ask. Everyone's going to bring things up. They're going to say you haven't won. Won it, and I think that's happened to all the great superstars that haven't won it. So.
Do you? One of the things I think you guys get penalized for. There was a period of time where everyone looked at the league. Shouldn't say everyone. A lot of teams looked at the league and said, "That can't be Golden State. Let's worry about the future." You guys were one of the only teams that said, "Let's try to beat them." And because of that, and because you kept playing them, 4 out of 5 years you play them in the playoffs. They beat you guys like they beat everyone except for LeBron and last year when they got hurt. You guys somehow get penalized in the public eye more than Portland, more than a team that only lost to them once or twice in the postseason. Is there any for you regret about going after Golden State the way you did, knowing now that what you know that you guys fell short?
No, because, I mean, we were at above 50% odds to win the title at one point when Chris Paul went out there. And so if you're not going for it, what are you doing? And unfortunately, I relive my childhood from Cleveland and my Cavaliers losing to the Bulls every year. We happen to run into one of the all-time great teams, and I do think they're going to reconstitute next year, sadly. So we're hoping to take advantage of it this year.
So the last couple of years, you looked at the Warriors, as Nick said, as the team to beat, and you almost game plan to face them and to beat them. Is it the Lakers this year, or do you kind of scrap that strategy and say, we're good enough, this is what we got, let's go out and see whoever we face?
Yeah, I mean, to me this year, Milwaukee is this remarkable story no one talks about. Speaking of disrespected in terms of James Harden, Milwaukee should be talked about like Golden State. I mean, they are an unbelievable team that I honestly don't understand why they're not. Obviously, they're in Milwaukee, maybe, but I was born in Wisconsin, so I'm a little defending of them. So they're clearly the team to beat in my mind, and we've got to get through the West, which can be extremely hard.
Sure.
If we make it there, it's going to be a real tough time.
Before the break, Nick said you were going to fix basketball, which
I'm in on it. My big thing is change it from threes and twos to fours and threes, but no one's ever going to actually do that. Then
nice, radical. I like it.
Because then free throws,
it's too much math. Well, that's the problem, and people don't like it. It would ruin the record books. People are mad at Daryl because everyone shoots all these threes now. They do it because they're at a 50% premium. If it was fours and threes, they'd be at a 33% premium. You get more of the mid-range game. That's not going to happen. What are some changes that actually could happen?
Well, I love the league office. We have the MIT conference coming up, and a lot of these ideas like four and three are game plan there, and Nick comes all the time. And, you know, the Elam ending, which happened in the All-Star game, I think that's coming to overtime. That's coming.
For real, that's going to come to overtime?
No, I don't know what's going to come. The league office does it, but I really think that that'll be in the next few years.
Tell the audience if they don't know the Elam
ending. Basically, it's playing to a target score. It's like playing pickup. Anyone plays pickup basketball, but in the NBA, how it could work is with 6 minutes to go, let's say the score is 95-90, you pick a target score, 105, you just played 105, and it gets rid of all the fouls and back and forth and delays. You want live basketball. You only want people to call timeouts if the ball is dead. Like, you have right now, every time, it's even last night in our Knicks game, it was like timeout, go, timeout, go, timeout. That's not when basketball's
fun. And it removes all the incentive for the trailing team to just foul, which nobody likes to watch free throws because you're going to a target score.
And speaking of fouls, we're basically the only professional sport that takes our main players out of the game. So everyone's coming there to see James Harden, to see Russell Westbrook. And if they happen to get foul trouble, they're either sitting or they're fouled out of the game. Instead of that, once they get their sixth foul, you should just do one shot in the ball or some other penalty just increases so you can keep those stars on the floor.
So remove fouling out entirely and just have it be punitive once you get to a sixth, seventh foul, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I would change too is the fact that right now, if you tune in a lot of NBA telecasts, the announcers are hate watching their own game. Like, it's amazing to me.
This is media bashing.
Hold on a second. A 1,000% agree with him.
Yeah, you'll tune in. They'll be like, well, what's happening here? Like, they're shooting too many three-pointers, like, back and
hold on.
Oh, they are. It's crazy.
Watch an NFL broadcast and an NFL pre- and post-game show, mm-hmm. and some people could say it's too much, but it is a celebration of the sport. Yeah. It is talking about the reason Tony Romo just got $1 million a game reportedly.
17 or so.
Oh, yeah. Right, $1 million a game. Yeah. Is because he is so excited to be there and so enthusiastic. And there is an element, it's not everyone, but there's an element of the people who are constructing the narrative while we're watching and right after we're watching that are just old men yelling at clouds. That are just saying it was better back in my day, or this isn't as good, or this isn't the way I like it. To which I say, I'm available, America. I love the game. Like, there are plenty of guys like me. I think TNT just hired Adam Lefko. It's a great example of a guy who loves the game and is excited to talk about it instead of saying, here's where it should be better. And I actually agree with that. I think there's an element of if you're there to celebrate the game, celebrate the game. You can still point out if a guy screwed up, if a coach made a bad decision, but as opposed to just picking at this isn't the way the game's supposed to be played.
Yeah, imagine the NFL if Romo was basically like, oh, this passing's not going to work. Where's my cloud of dust? Where is it? Yeah. Literally the whole game. That's NBA games right now.
Where's my cloud of dust?
Where is my cloud? Like, why aren't we smashing that ball in there? Tune into any NBA game. That's what we get all night. And I think we're going to fix it over time. But right now, and the other thing that happens, you tune in, they go, well, why are we watching tonight? Nothing matters. Nothing matters till the playoffs. Nothing.
Well, can we just follow up real quick?
You're like, okay, I'm going back
you,
to
you had CSI. You had a very famous tweet. Not the tweet you're thinking of. It was to our friend Doug Gottlieb, where he complimented Scott Drew, the Baylor coach. And you said, it's really been an incredible run for Coach Drew and Baylor, but you know, winning a title is the only thing that matters. Anyone who hasn't won a title must hang their head in shame for eternity. And that's your tweet. It's tongue in cheek. But I do wonder, do you think because of shows like this and others, there has been almost too much of a premium put on just the final weeks of the playoffs, as opposed to recognize, man, Harden's going to average 35 again. Giannis has the highest PER ever. Luka's doing something we've never, like as far as celebrating what's being done over the course of 5 months of the regular season.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we have the best game that highlights our best athletes in the world every single night. And again, it's almost like cognitive dissonance. People tune in and they're like being told how they shouldn't watch and how it's not a fun game to watch. It's bizarre to me. Like the NFL would never let it happen. And I don't understand it. So.
Daryl, thanks so much for hanging out today. No, Rand. We appreciate it. Appreciate everything you have to say. Appreciate your time this morning. We got to talk about the Clippers. They are in the middle of their toughest stretch of the season, taking on OKC last night. Kawhi not only played, Nick, but he played well. Yep. Dropped a game-high 25. Clippers won. They now have the Rockets in Houston tomorrow night, and they got the first-place Lakers on Sunday. That's not fun. But, Nick, what will this win in their upcoming stretch tell us about the Clippers?
All right, so I've got to be fair. A couple weeks ago, before Joel Embiid was out, okay, I said this five-game stretch is going to tell us a ton about the Clippers. Denver, Philly, OKC, Houston, LA. Now, Philly, you kind of scratch off that list because no Simmons, no Embiid. Shake Milton drops 39. Drops you. They score 130, but you get the win. They were extraordinary against Denver. My friend Colin Coward texts me during the game, Clippers are terrifying when they're fully healthy. They were great against Denver. Now, Denver's also a team that last night couldn't beat the Golden State Warriors at home, so Denver's in a bit of a funk right now. OKC has been an extraordinary fourth quarter team, the best closing team in the league. Clippers did something really smart yesterday. Made sure the fourth quarter wasn't going to matter because they were so good throughout. So they have been very impressive over this stretch thus far. The determining factor, though, is of course going to be these two games. I went into the year saying Clippers are the third best team in the Western Conference, behind Los Angeles and Houston. They now play Los Angeles and Houston. Houston has beaten them 2 out of 3 times this year. The one loss was a 3-point loss. Kawhi hit the game winner. I'm very curious to see how they do in Houston. And can they go up 3-0 on the Lakers? I know if they do, no one will care. The Lakers are number one seed. People say you can't beat the Clippers. So they have done well up to this point. They have looked good at full strength. I'm very curious to see how they do against Houston and against the Lakers, the two teams that I feel are better than them in the Western Conference.
We have a small sample size, I think, when this LA Clippers team is healthy. And I know that you don't have a whole lot of belief in them being one of the top teams or the top team in the East, however, or in the West. But this is why people are so high, myself included, on what they can be. Because when they are healthy, the depth they have, the way they can come at you in ways, the multiplicity in which they can attack you on both ends of the court, I think we're starting to see. And you said it, 9-0 when healthy, also when Beverly, Kawhi Leonard, and Paul George play, they're 19-4. So I think this will, assuming that they all play, assuming that they're healthy, which I know are always big
huge
ifs in your mind.
Assumptions, though.
Yeah,
they
but
haven't been. It's taken them this far into the season.
But the point is, but a lot of it is whether you want to call it injury management, load management. This is all building up to the postseason, and this is all building up to why people have a belief in this Clippers team that they are making sure to manage themselves to be healthy in the playoffs and in the postseason. I do think we're going to be able to tell something from it. I'm curious to see, because this also was the first time they're playing this Houston team looking the way that they look. And so this is a very different style. I think how they match up, how they attack one another is something that will be fascinating to see. I also think, to me, it will be more telling to me for the Lakers side of things than the Clippers side of things, because I do believe that the Lakers, it would be important for them not to go down 3-0 in the regular season series.
And the one other time they play now this year is for the Lakers on a back-to-back.
It's what, March 8th?
March 8th or 9th, whatever it is. But it's the game that was postponed after Kobe's death. That's a game where the Lakers probably will have the one seed. Well, no, they won't have the one seed locked up by then. But since it's the third game in three nights, which never happens in the NBA anymore, you wonder how much you're going to be able to take away from it. This could be, on Sunday, the last time we see these two teams play each other full strength unless they play in the playoffs.
What would make you nervous as a Laker guy?
Oh, they blow out Houston and they handle the Lakers again. I'll say, Clippers at full strength are what everyone has told me they'll be.
But would you go a little further and say maybe the load management worked because it all kind of fell into place?
Let's go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think load management, to me, the load management, it will be a telltale sign in the postseason. To me, this is too early to
tell
whether.
There's nothing to be answered about load management in the regular season.
Well, I just think it's how they've been approaching things. I think what will happen is the Lakers, which have been at full bore, and LeBron James, as we typically see, and then you have the different approach by the Clippers, some of the Clippers stars, and just all of them being healthy. However, to me, I think the test will be, the big question has been defensively. There's been so much talk about them being a top defense. They're starting to get to that point. I would like to see how they handle this Houston team and then how they match up against the Lakers again.
And they look like a top defense last night. This weekend against Philly, it looked like a terrible defense against a team without its best two guys. So they're kind of hit and miss in that regard. Janet, to answer your question, let's see how they look in the first round.
Okay.
Let's see, because the Lakers have tried. They're going to sweep their first round series, whether it's Memphis or San Antonio, if New Orleans gets up there, whomever it is.
Portland.
Portland maybe. Portland could be a tough one, actually. Yeah. The Clippers, let's see how they look against Dallas. Let's see how they look against, if they get OKC again, if they get the Jazz. If that series goes six, then all of a sudden, a lot of the rest that you banked, it's not like sleep, can't bank it, that you rest early in the, that you used, got early in the year, how much does that help you in your second round, which might be Clippers-Rockets in round two if they end up as the 2-3?
I was just going to say, if you could bank sleep, that would be amazing. I'm sorry, I got off topic for a second, but I got excited about banking
sleep. I felt like you've read a few sleep articles.
I feel like I
thought
that's
how it works. Do you even sleep? I thought you did not sleep.
I hibernate.
Giannis now, the 25-year-old phenom, well on his way to back-to-back MVP honors. That's good. But he knows what great looks like. Tall, bearded, and referred to as the king. How about this? Turns out that the king, LeBron James, is actually pushing the Greek freak in more ways than one.
As we see you every day taking care of your body, you know, really taking that part of the game seriously. I asked you before about LeBron and being this age and being able to perform at the level he's able to. When you look at him at that age and still being in the MVP conversation, you know, does that inspire just the way he's able to take care of his body and still be representing the league at this age?
Yeah, it's amazing. Obviously, I think, how old is he, 35, and playing the high level, hoping to see him win, and he just leads the path for us. You know, a lot of times we think that, okay, we're going to retire at 35, but seeing a guy at 35 being still top three best player in the world, you know, that makes us want to be there, you know, like makes me want to be, you know, there one day. So I gotta keep taking care of my body. Eating the right way, being healthy, and you know, as I said, he paved the way, and hopefully we can just follow.
So lucky us, we all get to watch these two go up against each other. Friday night, Bucks at Lakers. Nick, is there anything at this point LeBron can do to swing the MVP conversation in his favor? I think right now we all agree it's going to Giannis.
Yeah, of course. There are things LeBron can do. Giannis, if the season ended today, Giannis should be the unanimous MVP. He should have all the votes. I think LeBron should be the unanimous second place vote getter if such a thing were to exist. But we have 25% of the season left, almost exactly. So I think this is the best way to look at it. Bucks, Lakers.
Yeah.
Bucks are up by 13. We're going into the fourth quarter. Game's not over. And this weekend, LeBron can go on a little 9-0 run, force a quick timeout. Oh, it's a four-point game now. Now we got an interesting final 11 minutes of basketball. If LeBron plays great, and Giannis struggles on Friday, and then LeBron follows that up with a great game Sunday against Kawhi and the Clippers, and all of a sudden, wait, the Lakers are only three back of the Bucks as far as the best record in basketball, and like, oh, Giannis now had a bad week after not winning Player of the Month, and LeBron's won back-to-back Players of the Month. And yeah, he can make it interesting. Now, he has to play great tomorrow. Giannis probably has to struggle a bit tomorrow, and LeBron has to follow it up on Sunday. But we wouldn't look at a team trailing a game by double digits through three quarters as the game over. We would just look at his one team as a drastic favorite. Giannis is a drastic favorite, but with 21, 22 games left, of course there's something LeBron can do, but
who's favorite in this game?
The line hasn't come out yet. My guess is it's going to be a pick 'em, maybe Lakers by one because it's in LA. You think the Bucks will be favored?
No, I thought Lakers would be favored by more.
No, I think Lakers maybe by one, maybe a pick 'em. Yeah, wow. Thereabouts. Oh.
I think you laid everything out in Jenna with the circumstance of the MVP. I think it has less to do with LeBron not necessarily being the front runner because of the performance that he's had throughout the course of the season. But Giannis has been an absolute monster in the way in which Milwaukee has been. They are on a historic pace for the ways in which they've been beating teams, the margin of victory, his win share. Whether you want to look at numbers, you want to look at the eye test, Giannis has just been extraordinary this season. So I think it has less to do with what LeBron has been able to do. But we've watched LeBron, who, when he hears talk about people, so you think about how he's played against Zion, he's been a beast.
Oh, he
has played against Giannis throughout the course, not only of his career.
Luka earlier this year, when Luka's buzz was really ascending, he had some great games.
And so for LeBron James and the Lakers, I think sometimes too, when we look at MVP voting, the difference between Milwaukee for is as incredible as they played this season, and for as much as we talk about the depth of their team, there was no true second star behind Giannis. Chris Middleton, an all-star, but not quite the same caliber. Eric Bledsoe.
Well, you think AD hurts LeBron's MVP?
I think there's just a different perspective on it. I do think, and I don't know if hurts is, you think it hurts?
I think it factors in, and
I think for LeBron, he understands how important getting AD to play the way he is to their winning, to their success. But I do think that factors in, that Giannis is the guy far and away above what the rest of his team and what the rest of his roster compilation.
Nick, let me ask you this. Who is this game more important for then? Is it for LeBron to maybe make a case, or is it for Giannis to keep the case?
Well, okay, so more important for the MVP discussion, it's far more important for LeBron because this is now, we just had Super Tuesday, right? Is Sanders in second place now? Now every state's more important to him. He got to somehow make up ground. If you're the one trailing, then every contest becomes more important for you. As far as for the individual teams,
yeah,
I would argue this game is more important for the Bucks because the Bucks have to keep proving themselves night in, night out against the best teams in basketball because of what happened last year. The Lakers, I think, have the confidence in any playoff series that we got LeBron. And that is a confidence that is going to carry them an enormous way. The Bucks don't have that, so what they need to be able to, I think, is the NBA Finals. I think it's important for the Bucks. It's like, we played you twice this year, and we beat you twice this year. Wilds, I know you think, though, this is less about Giannis's career, you know, the fact that he's going to set the all-time record in PER and the Bucks are going to win 70 games. You've almost, I don't want to say more emotionally, but more about story arcs on this.
Tell me if you buy this. We'll go to Iverson. You can almost define Iverson's career with two plays.
The step over.
Yep.
And the crossover.
And the crossover. It's whole career, two plays. So I wonder if, when we talk about PER and all the advanced stats, if LeBron can make his case with like one superstar play. When Giannis goes up for one of those big dunks and LeBron blocks it. Or LeBron goes into the lane and like yams it on Giannis. And I wonder if that's like, will change the 100 voters and be like, whoo, there it is. There's like the defining moment.
I love the concept of that. I think too much now, though, we are so focused on those.
LeBron is. Don't say and don't.
What? Analytics.
No, no, no. I was going to say the defining moments of the post. Think about how many defining moments in the playoffs and in the postseason LeBron had. I'm not quite sure.
But for this year, you don't think he's saying could he have the defining moment of the MVP by having a great moment over Giannis?
A Heisman moment.
Certainly, if Giannis went up for a big dunk and LeBron blocked it. And Giannis fell into the stands.
Yeah, I think the voters
the ball
are too
went
smart
into the,
now.
I do.
I think 30 years ago, yes. I think right now it's going to be like, well, if you look at the
numbers and when you look at it.
I don't think it's about numbers because for Giannis, for as much as you want to talk about PER, for as much as you want to talk about all of his eye test, ask any coach, ask any player, you watch what he's able to do on the floor and why Milwaukee is winning in the manner that they're winning. The fact that these numbers that Giannis is putting up is in under 31 minutes per game. I think it's less about analytics this year and more about, good gosh, this man has been an absolute monster.
And Giannis should be the MVP as of now. We got a quarter of the season left.
I like it.
We'll see. Well, you got a quarter to play. LeBron's trailing by double digits. We'll see what he can do on Friday. We can cut into that deficit.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.